ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Last week on Australia Wide, we brought you to the goldfields of WA, where flooding was wreaking havoc on stations and closing down freight routes. A week later, and the worst of the weather has passed, but massive swathes of the outback are still swamped and roads are still closed. In the tiny far-flung community of Cosmo Newbury, 90 kilometres northeast of Laverton, the impact is being felt hard. All roads in and out are underwater. The airstrip has taken a beating and food supplies are concerningly low.
So bread, last I checked this afternoon, we're down to 4 loaves left in the freezer.
But yesterday afternoon, some unexpected good news came in the form of a supply truck. Bogged 10 kilometres out of town. I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk country, Perth. But we start in the top end, in the remote east of the Northern Territory, in the Gulf of Carpentaria, where the evacuation of residents from the remote town of Borroloola, as severe tropical cyclone Megan nears, has been suspended as weather conditions are preventing aircraft from landing safely. 700 people have been attempting to evacuate to Darwin on RAAF flights, but the ADF cancelled those flights, with the wild weather making it too dangerous for those planes to land. Those residents are now being told to shelter in place, with authorities saying there are enough buildings on community to withstand up to a Category 3 system. Here's Northern Territory Police Superintendent Sonia Kennan earlier this afternoon.
Everyone in Borroloola needs to find somewhere safe while the bad weather is happening, and we have strongly encouraged people to find houses that have been built to code, houses that are fairly new and built in the community that are at high ground and are also strongly built for the conditions. Police have a list of the safe buildings and that has been provided to the local controller in the community, and so they are closely monitoring the situation while they're there. There are a number of police officers who have been working throughout the night, I don't think they've slept, to ensure that the community is being advised through public messaging. They're doing person-to-person house calls. They are constantly liaising with them, and we even have some other people that aren't police officers and they don't really belong to the community as well, but they're there and they are in a safe place, and they're also assisting with this messaging as well out to everybody.
So in that community, we would expect that the winds to be sustained at around 95 kilometres per hour with wind gusts to 130 kilometres per hour. This is getting close to Category 2 cyclone strength, but it could also be closer to a Category 1 system as it passes Borroloola, just depending on how much it interacts with land and how much the system maintains or releases some of its strength.
That was Sinead Gamble from the Bureau of Meteorology outlining the forecast wind gusts that may be experienced in Borroloola, the community closest to the track path of Tropical Cyclone Megan.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
Far out in the remote goldfields of WA, there's a tiny community called Cosmo Newbury. Residents have been cut off from the rest of the country by the once-in-a-lifetime rain event that inundated all roads in and out of the town, with 227 millimetres of rain reported last week. However, news over the weekend of an unexpected food delivery came as a pleasant surprise to everyone in town. From the middle of Outback WA, reporter Emily Smith has this story.
Casey Murray had been worried about her small community of Cosmo Newbury running out of food.
Mainly just like meat and stuff, that's kind of running down because we have extra people in the community as well who've kind of been stranded here. They're from neighbouring communities. So it's been a little influx in the store of people coming through and buying supplies.
Oh no, are there any other products that are getting hit really hard by people worrying about them running out?
So bread, we're down to our last I checked just afternoon, we're down to 4 loaves left in the freezer. So the people are, you know, worried that they're not going to have any bread.
But after speaking to the media about those concerns on Saturday, Ms. Murray received an interesting phone call from the manager of a nearby mine.
So we received a phone call this morning from the GM at the Gruyere mine site asking, because they had seen the article online, the ABC article that we did, if we wanted to get some of the supplies from the track that was bogged 10 kilometres west of Cosmo Newbury.
She said the mining company had tried to get a semi-trailer filled with food to the mine a few days earlier, but with floodwaters covering roads throughout the region, it got bogged. It sent another truck to try and free it, but it also got stuck in the mud. She said the mine manager suggested if community members could get to the truck, then they could have some of the food it was carrying.
So HM and a few of the other CNAC workers went out there and started to offload some of the supplies that was on that bog truck.
HM is the Cosmo Newbury chairperson and cannot be named for cultural reasons. He was among the party who set out from Cosmo Newbury to the bogged truck. Not only did they reach it, but they managed to free the truck and its first trailer and drove it back to the community.
Yeah, so that bread they will be distributing, a lot of fresh milk. I was thinking about there's a dozen cartons of fresh milk. I think about a ton and a half of food, so that's a lot of fruit and veggies and a lot of cold meat, and that should last, keep people happy for the next quite a few days.
Photos from the community on Sunday show all the food laid out in a local shed and people coming from the community and grabbing bread, fresh fruit, vegetables and other things that they need. The accidental food delivery came at a good time. The Department of Fire and Emergency Services and WA police personnel had visited the community by helicopter on Saturday. They had planned to return with four crates of bread and other goods on Sunday.
So DFS had let us know that there was an issue with the helicopter and it can't get out here.
But finally, this morning, the helicopter made it to the community and delivered the extra supplies. Laverton Shire President Patrick Hill said it could be a long time before roads across the area reopen.
They've had anything from 250 to 300 millimetres out there in the country out there is just like an inland lake at the moment, and there's still a lot of water over the road, and it looks pretty grim for a while yet.
He said the Shire was reaching out to communities, miners and stations, but he urged anyone who needed help to get in touch.
Anyone out there that is stuck and haven't been in touch with people or contact with people, please contact us somehow so let you know that you're safe and well. And if you're in trouble, well, we'll do what we can to get someone out there to get you.
Thanks to reporter Emily Smith for that story from WA's remote goldfields.
This is ABC Australia Wide.
To Queensland now. It's a hobby that could bring you face-to-face with a shark, croc or some of the best catches Australia has to offer. I'm talking about spearfishing. Still, despite its risks, spearfishing is booming in popularity as adrenaline chasers share their underwater adventures online. And even those who've witnessed shark attacks on fellow fishers can't bring themselves to hang up their spears. Our reporter Lily Nuttling asked the question, what is it about spearfishing that gets people hooked? This report from the coastal town of Lucinda, North Queensland.
Zachary Schmidt was hooked on spearfishing from his very first dive.
For me, the thing I love the most about spearfishing is just being down on the bottom, getting to see all the other fish life that is normally down there, from whales, manta rays, turtles, sea snakes. There's so much life down there that you get to experience when you go diving.
Armed with a harpoon gun and waterproof camera, the self-described Spiro holds his breath for 90 seconds and plunges up to 25 metres below the ocean surface. The 22-year-old regularly makes trips to the Great Barrier Reef, capturing the highlights for his more than 150,000 social media followers.
Because it's so unique and it's just what you can capture under the water can be just so incredible that quite a lot of people obviously do record and film their diving and they do love to post it online. So there's a really big industry for that, and it's growing and growing every year. You see more divers in the water, more videos getting posted.
Spearfishing is one of mankind's oldest fishing techniques. It's exploded in popularity in recent years as more thrill seekers like Zachary post their underwater adventures online. But the sport isn't without its risks.
For example, today, out diving on the reef, we did see several sharks, but most of them are just coming in, having a look, and then making their way about. There's a lot of things in the water that obviously can harm you, but if you do it correctly and you're diving with buddies, generally it can be relatively safe.
Two men have been attacked by sharks while spearfishing off the coast of Lucinda in North Queensland in recent years. Their friend and veteran spearfisherman Peter Kosica witnessed both attacks firsthand and rendered first aid.
I consider Rick and Glenn to be lucky. I didn't think they would survive. It did open my eyes to what happens because I know we were a bit blasé or overconfident. In a lot of the places we dived is very dangerous, like with no visibility and deep diving.
It took Peter more than 2 years to get back in the water after the first shark attack in 2017. He returned within a week of the second. The risk of a third attack still plays on his mind, but he can't let spearfishing go.
It's just, I think, the adrenaline rush, and it's a different world under there. It's beautiful when it's clean and things you see and things you hope not to see.
He's watched with interest as more and more people pick up the sport.
When I first started, there was only, I won't say anyone, but there was only not many doing it, and that's why there was fish galore. But yeah, as a sport, it's really exploded. I think because people were obviously sat at home, couldn't do much because of the COVID, but I think people just getting out more and enjoying life a bit more. Probably sick of computer games and TV a bit.
As the sport grows, Fisheries Queensland has urged divers to familiarise themselves with the rules about where they can and can't spearfish and always dive in pairs. Peter Kosica agrees.
It can be a dangerous sport. You're obviously in the ocean. It's not just sharks. I think the biggest killer of spearfishermen is shallow water blackout, where you push yourself too much and blackout. I've noticed, because they want to get this YouTube video or this picture with this barramundi, they are taking silly risks because not only have we exploded as a sport, but crocodile populations obviously exploded as well. One thing I do say, if they do go, just always be wary and keep an eye out and never spear alone. I have, and it's absolutely silly because it's dangerous. Always keep in your mind that there are predators there that will want to kill you.
That's veteran spear fisherman Peter Kosica, ending that story by Lily Nuthling and Chloe Shimicki from Lucinda in North Queensland. If you're a regular listener to ABC Radio, there's a good chance you'll know gardening legend Sabrina Hahn. Her passion for horticulture has attracted thousands of gardening fans over decades on the radio. But the ABC presenter has found an unlikely new band of followers, inmates doing time in WA's prison farms. Down in the state's Great Southern region, Sabrina visited the Pardalup Prison Farm to talk with inmates about using their growing skills to find work once they have served their time inside. Reporter Mark Bennett has this story.
There's no mistaking Sabrina Hahn's trademark laugh or her passion for plants.
I love your veggie patch. It's awesome, yeah.
And the people who grow them.
Well done.
At the Pardalup Prison Farm, west of Mount Barker, the ABC Radio gardening veteran is the guest of honour for the 87 farm workers in prison greens.
Everything's just cropping really well.
Inmates working at the minimum security prison, designed to reintegrate offenders back into the community, produce tons of fruit, vegetables, meat and fish destined for the state's main prisons.
The leaves look really healthy.
The gardening guru providing impromptu growing tips.
But you will have to thin them out.
And also booking a dinner date.
When I come next time to visit you, Uncle.
I cook for you.
You cook for me.
Okay.
I have.
100%.
Yes. Lemon chicken.
Very good food.
Yeah. Good healthy food.
Very healthy food.
It's a deal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Uncle, very much.
But she's here on a mission to inspire prisoners to hone their horticultural skills while doing time, to be job ready for WA's food growers who are desperate for workers.
The little nurseries cannot get staff. The farms cannot get staff. And horticulture can take you to many different pathways. There are so many opportunities for everything that involves growing food. To be able to grow your own food in your own district, but to have the skills to know how to grow them, is going to become paramountly important. So the opportunities for work within that industry are enormous. This is a highly productive, minimum, low security prison. The prison farm here, not only do they have horticulture, they have aquaculture, they have hydroponics, they have sheep, They have cattle, so they do all the animal welfare. The amount of food that comes out of this farm is incredible. And what I find different about talking to the prisoners here is they have a really strong sense of giving back to community, of actually producing and being a productive part of a much bigger community. And that gives the prisoners an entirely different feel for having self-pride, self-worth. But the other big thing about this prison is it gives them the opportunity to learn not just life skills, but skills that they can get employment with when they actually leave prison. So the food bowl will have to come down south because climate change is affecting how and where we grow all our food. So the food bowls that we have now in Geraldton, Carnarvon and the Kimberley are still going well because there's lots of water there. But the market gardens that are around Perth and just south of Perth, they are experiencing extreme heat, and it's the easterly winds that are just ruining crops. So we have to look at other alternatives of where we grow our food. So the southwest will be a very important food bowl.
Sabrina Hahn setting an example by hiring ex-convicts in her own business.
They've all talked about giving back to society for the wrongs that they've done. So let's give them the opportunity to do that. Let's support them on that pathway. And I have been very active in doing that. And we'll continue to.
Sabrina Hahn speaking to our reporter Mark Bennett at the Puddle Up Prison Farm, just east of Mount Barker in WA's Great Southern. And if you want more of Sabrina, you can check out the ABC's Roots and Shoots podcast. There are two new episodes every week, which you can find on the ABC Listen app. Everything is bigger in Texas is a popular expression for a reason. Texas is the largest state in the US mainland. It boasts the country's biggest ranch, and it's home to the world's biggest pair of cowboy boots. It also takes its American-style barbecue seriously, with the Texas House of Representatives passing a proclamation in 1999, making Lockhart its official barbecue capital. Across the Pacific, however, Aussies are quickly catching up in quantity and quality. American barbecue in Australia, it appears, is the biggest it has ever been. In fact, a metal fabricator at Plainland, 60 kilometres west of Brisbane, has just finished building what he says is the biggest smoker of its kind. Brandon Long has this story.
It is the biggest reverse flow smoker in the world.
That's creator Brendan Muehling, affectionately named Frank the Tank, and built for a restaurant at nearby Walloon. The $30,000 steel behemoth was crafted using the ends of an old service station gas tank and a large sheet of rolled steel. It measures 7.5 metres in length, 5.5 metres from the ground to the top of the smokestacks, and with a diameter of 1.8 metres, a tall person could stand upright in it. After being welded together, it had to be moved with a crane due to its 6.5-ton mass. These dimensions give it the capacity to cook 150 briskets at a time, which is about 1 ton of meat. The build, which took 4 weeks, did not go unnoticed.
When I was at the front of my place, everyone was pulling up and just taking pictures, and people were just saying, that's just insane.
As to why there was a need for a 19,000-litre smoker, Mr. Muehling says since 2018, restaurant owner and his mate Luke Sagas has been pushing the limits of what is possible in the world of barbecue.
It started one night when we were just having some beers, to be honest, after meat stock last year, and Luke goes, we need to go bigger. In America, they all stop at 1,000 gallons because they believe over 1,000 gallons you can't make a smoker work. I guess we wanted to prove them wrong. It actually works very, very well. It's pretty crazy.
Mr. Muehling believes Australia's love of the culinary style was driven by TV shows like Barbecue Pitmasters, and social media has taken it to the next level. Videos of his smoker on social media have been viewed more than 1.5 million times.
My page is blowing up with a lot of American people starting to follow because even they're blown away just by the sheer size of it.
American barbecue is a style of cooking that originated in the southern US. One of the first in Australia to capitalise on the market was Brisbane restaurant Blue Smoke Barbecue, which opened its doors in 2006. A decade later, Meatstock Festival debuted in Sydney and Melbourne, and in 2022, it spread to its first regional destination of Toowoomba. That year, the Australian leg sold 40,000 tickets. In 2023, it jumped to 60,000.
It was and still is a bit of a phenomena. We do hear every day of new people just getting into it and buying their first smoker and wanting to know how to cook.
That's co-founder Jay Beaumont.
There's groups on Facebook with 400,000 followers that are just getting into it for the first time and asking lots of questions.
While not likely to quash the rise of smoked meats in Australia, Mr. Beaumont is noticing the effect the price of meat is having on the culture. Cuts like beef brisket and beef ribs, once cheap and considered secondary cuts, have risen sharply in price, pushing some to consider more affordable cuts like picana, which is part of the rump cap. International barbecue champion Danielle Bennett, better known as Diva Q, travels the world teaching avid students these skills. Born in Canada and now living in Florida, Miss Bennett has won more than 400 national and international barbecue awards before hanging up her competition boots to teach. Now on her seventh visit down under, she says Aussies never fail to impress.
Some of the best barbecue I've ever had in my life, after having done this for 18 years, hasn't just been in the United States, it's been here in Australia. They are making succulent, moist, delicious, beautiful briskets. They are serving up skewers of meat that are just absolutely jaw-dropping and mouth-watering. And then, you know, there's all the other, you know, interesting fusion items. You've got people that are doing things a little differently. I think the barbecue culture in Australia, even though it's still emerging, is just kicking off to untold heights already. And, this is why I always laugh when, you know, often my American friends will say, oh, you know, you need to go teach them how to do it. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure a lot of Australians right now could teach other people how to do it as well. They're that good.
Danielle Bennett ending that story from Brandon Long. And you can see a photo of just how big that smoker is on the ABC News website. And finally, here on Australia Wide, you may have heard it's Harmony Week. To celebrate, we're heading to one town that holds a massive harmony festival. In southern WA, the town of Katanning has more than 50 language groups and is considered one of the most diverse pockets in the state. Our reporter, Bianna Friori, visited the local Islamic leader and restaurant owner, Elop Maidi, to chat about why he loves living in the small town.
I came with mum and dad. It's just coincident the meatworks needed workers to come here to work. And happened to be the islanders were about to leave Christmas looking for a job. And then, wanted the meatworks abattoir need workers to work here. So it married them together. Here we are. When we first arrived here, people had a lot of doubt. You know, people were unsure. People were fearful. And people were, it's fear of, you know, what are these people doing here? But, you know, as times and years gone by, and they understood. You know, we're just another group of people that, just like the Italian and the Greeks that came here before us.
What's the secret to living in harmony?
Respect one another. And have a good football team, apart from Eagles. But apart from that, you know, people the vibrant, it's the spirits in about Katanning that people just love to come here and wanted to know why we are all here. Why did we arrive here? Why did we choose Katanning? And yeah, there's so many answers and questions here that anyone could say or answer. By so many perspective, I think Katanning has bring a lot of positive outlook. In such a way that we all respect one another. I think it's called, yeah, and it's a very tolerant place where people, can live happily in the most harmonious way. Tongans, so you have the Solomon Islands, you have the Fijian, you have people from Malaysia, Indonesia, people from Singapore that have arrived here. Come and visit. Come and visit. Don't judge by the cover of the book. Come like you did. Come and see yourself and feel. Don't judge quickly of any town that you want to live in.
Elop Mighty from Katanning, finishing that story from Brianna Fiore. And that is Australia Wired for this Monday. I'm Alex Hyman. Hope you can join me again tomorrow. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.